This is a rebroadcast from this morning's local talk. Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with my good friend and neighbor Mike Metz of the Prairie Winds Prairie. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Pat.
Tell us how you named your home place Prairie Winds.
Well, it was partially the weather, but we had a horse that we named Prairie Winds, and it was kind of an honor of her. So there's the spirit of the horse and the spirit of the raptors out there.
Yeah, and northeast of Ames, Iowa, in Milford Township, the Metz Prairie is functioning alive and well, and what a great destination that is on 580th Avenue.
And the Prairie Marsh is starting to hold some water now. So
absolutely, yeah. Delightful. The weather will be autumn-like today, mostly cloudy with a high of 53 and a low of 39, looking like sun and high of 60. Tomorrow, Saturday, 51 on Sunday, with a high of 46 Monday and a low of 30. And on Tuesday, a low of 29, and on Wednesday, a low of 26 is in the forecast. So I guess that means November conditions. Let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from our pages of our local newspaper.
There was plenty of news in the Ames Tribune this past week, including word of a new interim principal at Ames High and an audit showing possible financial misdeeds in one Story County town. Let's start where we usually do, with last Friday's paper, which reported that newly released investigative findings show the Crew Club practice that ended with the deaths of two Iowa State University students earlier this year was the first time those students had been on the water. 20-year-old Yaakov Ben David and 19-year-old Derek Nani died last March when their boat capsized on Little Wall Lake, about 20 miles north of the university's campus. Three other Crew Club members were rescued and survived. The new findings show that ISU did not have adequate oversight of its sports clubs, and that Crew Club members failed to follow safety procedures outlined in the club's own governing document. They also showed that the lake practice that turned fatal was the first time in about 18 months that the crew team had been on the water because of the coronavirus pandemic. Investigators said team members' excitement at the chance to be on the water again likely clouded their judgment about the safety of the conditions that day. The Trib also reported that 4th Congressional District Republican incumbent Randy Feenstra announced he would run for re-election next year. Feenstra easily won his first term last November by defeating Democrat J.D. Scholten. So far this time, no other candidate, Democrat or Republican, has lined up to run against Feenstra. And the Trib also had word that U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack said the White House plans to look at consolidation within the seed industry, the next step in carrying out President Biden's order to increase competition within agriculture. Biden has directed his administration to investigate consolidation across several industries, including agriculture, saying it's resulted in farmers paying too much for seed, tractors, and fertilizer, and resulted in higher food prices. Saturday's paper had more on the investigative findings in connection with the accident that resulted in the deaths of two Iowa State University Crew Club members last March. The investigative reports show that some of the students were not dressed for the cold weather that day and that practice should have been canceled because of weather conditions. The reports say that misjudgments and missed opportunities for communication let the practice go forward. And the reports show that the Crew Club student members, the coach and the faculty advisor, and administrators in the ISU Recreation Services Department either did not understand or disputed who was responsible for various aspects of the safe management of the club. The Trib also reported that the Ames School District had appointed an interim principal at Ames High after the high school's previous leader was reassigned earlier this month for reasons that have still not been publicly disclosed. The district named Stephen Johns as the interim principal. He most recently had served as the principal at Des Moines East High School. He will lead Ames High for the rest of this school year and for all of the 2022-2023 school year. The school's previous principal, Valerie Nyberg, was reassigned just 15 months after she had been appointed. She is still employed by the district, but district officials say her continuing role has not yet been determined. Her departure came after reports that fights at the high school had been a problem this fall, and a video posted online appeared to show her being assaulted by someone at the school. And Tuesday, a week ago, Ames police had responded to a call of an out-of-control student. There was more last Saturday, including word that a new study shows that Iowa is the fourth highest state in the nation when it comes to having children under the age of 6 who have detectable levels of lead in their blood. 76% of children under 6 in Iowa have that. Federal officials say no level of lead is safe for children. And there was a report that the nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency had released a second set of maps revising Iowa's 4 congressional districts and legislative boundaries. The new proposal would affect now 2nd District Congresswoman Marionette Miller Meeks, who lives in Wapello County. That county would be put into District 3, the one represented by Democrat Cindy Axne. Sunday's paper brought word that the Ames Children's Theater had disbanded after more than 40 years in operation. The reason? The coronavirus pandemic. The organization offered theater experience for children in Ames and surrounding communities. The group's founder, Carol Horowitz, had moved from Brooklyn and never expected to stay here long. But she did, and came up with the idea for the Children's Theater. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had held a workshop on bike trail infrastructure. Cycling advocates from around the area praised the progress made by the city over the past decades, but said the trail system still lacks connectivity. The Trib also reported that the Boone High School Student Council will host a haunted house and carnival starting at 5 o'clock today for youth in grades kindergarten through 8th grade. The event will take place at Boone High. And the Trib's website had word that Iowa State University's football team had defeated Oklahoma State University 24-21 on Saturday at Jack Trice Stadium. Tuesday's paper reported that doctors in Iowa are worried about what's going to happen this winter to children. The University of Iowa's Stead Family Children's Hospital's 190-bed facility is usually about 2/3 full during a typical autumn. But this year, the facility has been jammed with young patients since July. Dozens who have the coronavirus have come in, and more have arrived with severe infections from other respiratory viruses, which usually do not strike in full force until late autumn or early winter. And to cap it all off, the flu season is coming. And there was a report that Dose Steelworks has bought the former mall in Story City and is in the process of updating the interior of the 100,000-square-foot space for a manufacturing facility. The company was established about 15 years ago in Iowa. It makes combine tractors, corn reels, and detachable rear hitches, among other things. The Story City facility will cost nearly $5 million, and it will bring 14 jobs to the city. Wednesday's paper brought word that the new interim principal at Ames High School would have his first day on the job today. The Ames School Board had approved the appointment of Stephen Johns on Monday. He will lead Ames High through the rest of this current school year and for all of the 2022-2023 year. His salary will be $92,000, and he will receive $10,500 for moving expenses and $1,500 for in-district travel. He previously has served as a principal at 2 public high schools in Des Moines and also led high schools in the Williamsburg and Kolo-Nisko districts. There was also word that Ames had held the first of 2 town hall meetings related to developing a climate action plan. Over the next year, the city will set targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions and work to create plans to reach those goals. The Trib also reported that Iowa was on track for its worst year for domestic violence deaths in more than a decade. From January to September, 17 Iowans were killed in domestic violence incidents. That 9-month total matches the total number killed last year. And that year was the worst on record in Iowa since 2010, when 20 people were killed. Much of this year's increase is being blamed on the coronavirus pandemic, because domestic violence victims have been unable to leave their homes, and because services have not been as accessible. And there was word that the a cappella group Straight No Tracer would perform tomorrow at Stevens Auditorium in Ames. One of the group's members, Tyler Tripp, is an Urbandale native. Yesterday's paper reported that a state audit into McCallsburg's finances found that nearly $90,000 in city money had been mishandled between 2014 and 2019. Thousands of dollars in utility bill reductions were allegedly made for dozens of the town's residents, including Mayor Chris Erickson and City Council member Leanne Hazen. Both Erickson and Hazen are running for re-election next Tuesday. The audit was conducted by the Iowa Auditor's Office and had been requested by city officials, concerned over improper financial transactions processed by former city clerk Jennifer Hightoff. The Story County Sheriff's Office says it's launched a criminal investigation into what it described as McCallberg's finances, records, and office proceedings. Among the report's findings, utility bill adjustments reduced the amount owed the city by Mayor Erickson by more than $2,000, with no payments posted for nearly 2 years. Adjustments reduced the utility bills for Councilmember Hazen by more than $1,200, with no payments posted for 18 months. Uncollected utility bills were spread across 71 of the town's utility customers, including one customer with bills totaling more than $16,000 over a 2-year period. McCallsburg has about 350 residents. And there was word yesterday that the city of Ames plans to pursue buyouts of rural water provider land. The city is surrounded by two water providers, and with the population of Ames expected to grow over the years, more water for such things as fire protection will be needed. If the buyouts are successful, Ames will be able to pursue growth and ensure fire protection for its residents. But those rural water providers have no obligation to give up their territory to cities. And today's Trib has word on yesterday's special session of the state legislature, when lawmakers accepted the latest set of redistricting maps drawn up by the Legislative Services Agency. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, taking my leave now, but promising to make a return visit to the same virtual seat on Monday morning at 7 on Local Talk, when I'll report on what's been making news all around Iowa. Until then, let's both get out and enjoy this last weekend of October.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. And the music interlude was Werewolves of London, because it is the Halloween and werewolves season. Ow! That was recorded live at the Capitol Theater in New Jersey, November 1st, 1982, by Warren Zevon and his band. Let's welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, Virginia Nichols of Iowa State University. Gina has created some programs or podcasts with her associates at ISU concerning soil health. Here's a third installment of her work.
The Secret in the Soil. Sitting on a bench outside the restaurant, Peter Mutton read and then reread the review. Early Bird was celebrating its 40th anniversary. a veritable century in restaurant years. A holdout from the farm-to-table model of the early 2000s, it was the only restaurant in Des Moines that was still able to serve fresh produce. An outbreak of E. coli had ravaged the national food distribution systems and spawned a long list of new regulations surrounding the transport of food. For the past 10 years, it had been near impossible to bring any fresh produce into the city. The inspection checkpoints were backed up for miles. Most of the produce rotted before ever making it to market. Most restaurants gave up and began using synthifood, lab-grown substances that the FDA deemed functionally equivalent to food. Early Bird, however, had always sourced the majority of its food from a farm within the city's limits, making it exempt from transportation regulations. More importantly, it allowed fresh produce to pass seamlessly from the farm into Early Bird's kitchen. The restaurant had recently been honored with a James Beard Award for its uncompromising adherence to the farm-to-table ethos. The award attracted new attention from the Des Moines food scene, attention that was further fanned by a Des Moines Register review written by Sharon Chen, the very review Mutton held in his hands. A new generation of diners were visiting Early Bird, making it the busiest it had been in years. Softball bullshit, Mutton thought, rereading the review. Nothing but lavish praise, not an ounce of criticism. But really, he expected no better from Sharon. It was her first review as the Des Moines Register food and dining reporter, a role that was rightfully Mutton's. When asked how he would make the transition from his role as a food technology reporter, Mutton had let slip he didn't think the departments were all that different. That it was time the food department rethought its stance on synthifood. He was passed over, and Sharon, fresh out of a journalism program in California, got the job. He was stuck in his role as food technology reporter, a job he'd served in for 30 years, and a job that did not provide him with the influence or respect he deserved, given his culinary acumen. Sitting on the bench, before he entered the restaurant, Mutton put on his Omnivision lenses. He blinked left side, right side, right side, left side, and felt a curtain of tension open across his forehead as the operating system booted up. A slight pain pressed into his eye sockets, sharp and small, like 100 tiny staples. After about 30 seconds, Zella greeted him and the interface loaded across his field of vision. "Hello, Mr. Mutton," the voice in his head said. "Would you like me to review the dossier before proceeding?" Mutton felt a soft vibration inside his head, like the gentle buzz from a good scotch. "Yes." Early Bird is famous for its chicken. Your objective is to identify the ingredients in the chicken's sauce. Mutton nodded softly. "If you succeed, Mr. Wentles will personally oversee the launch of your food influencer channel. You will have the complete backing, financial and otherwise, of the Equinox Corporation." Yes, Mutton thought. Then my opinion will make or break a restaurant. I'll have my own Synthy food line, my face on every package. No one will open their fridge without first thinking about what I'm eating. And the Register will come to regret their gross underestimation of my influence. Mutton looked at Early Bird's front doors. "The first thing I'll do is post an updated review of this relic of a restaurant. One completely contrary to the Register. My review will go viral. Early Bird will go under. And the farm-to-table movement, with its silly adherence to an antiquated model, will finally die. It was a sunny Sunday morning in May, and the restaurant was busy with brunch. Service had just begun, but the restaurant was already full. Nearly every table occupied. There was a cluster of guests waiting at the host stand, while two young hosts struggled to juggle the ringing phones and the immediacy of guest demands. "Get me a reservation," Mutton thought. "Early Bird does not accept reservations for brunch. Guests are accommodated on a first-come, first-served basis." "Then access the computer system and put my name on top of the wait list," he thought. "I can't do that, but it will arouse suspicion. Morgan and Tucker are very attentive, and how do you know their names? I can access the company's employee schedule. I can also see a person's entire online presence. For example, this morning, Tucker Patel tweeted that his Uber was late at 6:51 a.m. from his apartment on 19th Court Avenue. That little brat lives on Court Ave? How does he afford that? He receives a monthly bank transfer of $3,500 from a Dr. Myra Patel. Figures. Mommy pays the rent. Okay, so what's the plan? Mutton felt a twitch in his temple. It felt like an electric worm burrowing across the great plain of his forehead. "Tell Morgan Martinez that you are here to see the chef, Natasha Rice." Bristling with confidence, Mutton approached the host stand and said to the girl, "Morgan, table for one, please." Morgan stared back at him, as if he'd just asked her to give him her socks. "The wait time is an hour," she said, "even for one." Mutton smiled understandingly. "Of course," he said, reading the script Zella was displaying in his lenses. "I don't mean to impose. I'm meeting Chef Rice at 1 for an interview, and she told me to stop in for a quick meal beforehand. Is there any room at the bar?" Morgan scrutinized Mutton. She asked for his name. "Tom Vilsack," he said, winking. Morgan brought up the chef's schedule and indeed saw a booking for 1 p.m. with a secretary, Tom Vilsack. Morgan paused, then looked up at Mutton, her face not betraying anything. "Of course, Secretary Vilsack," she said, "right this way. I'm sure we can find a place for you at the bar." "Why say I'm Tom Vilsack? Is he actually on the schedule?" Mutton asked Zella in his head. "Chef Rice does not have password-protected scheduling software. Your facial features and body proportions are similar. And former Secretary Vilsack is more respected in Iowa than you are. I'll erase the appointment after you order." Morgan led Mutton to a sunlit corner of the bar, next to an open window. Set apart from the chaos of the main dining room, it also offered a full view of the open concept kitchen. There was a pile of prepped chickens stacked in front of the wood-fired oven. A chef carefully fed a batch of birds into the arched opening, while another chef plated the ones that had just been removed. Right before the dish went out, a chef ladled on a generous portion of green sauce. Mutton watched the ritual, looked over the menu, and located the chicken dish. Chicken with green sauce. Mutton rolled his eyes. Inspired description, he thought. So what? I'll just order the chicken, get a to-go box, and bring it to Equinox Labs? Then they identify the ingredients? No. We've already analyzed the ingredients. Mutton reddened with embarrassment. What do you mean? We've had hundreds of chickens analyzed at the Equinox Labs. Every food tech on staff has attempted to decode the green sauce. Well, then what am I supposed to do here? Remember, if you are successful, Mr. Wintels will personally oversee the launch of your influencer career. That doesn't answer my question. How about you just access the ingredient list on the servers? All restaurants have prep lists, invoices, things like that. All of the ordering is done in person, and all of the paperwork is done offline. Sounds inefficient, thought Mun. How are these people still in business? You need to, Zella stopped. Edmonton looked up to see Morgan looming over his table. Something to drink, she asked. What is she doing here? I'm at the bar. Shouldn't the bartender be taking my drink order? Zella was quiet.
You are listening to a production by Gina Nichols of Iowa State University concerning soil health, and this is KHOY Community Radio at 89.1 FM. Now let's return to her farm-to-table story.
I'll take a Bloody Mary, Button said. May I see your ID, please? ID? I'm a senior citizen. Morgan smiled. Restaurant policy. Is that true? Nothing in the employee handbook confirms that. But if she sees your ID, she'll know you aren't Tom Vilsack. Great. So what do you have on her? Anything I can use? Mutton felt the now familiar twitch in his temple. The electric worm burrowed and scurried. Besides her data in the payroll system, nothing. She has no detectable online presence. You mean she doesn't use the internet? It would seem that way. But she's like 20. She was practically born online. On second thought, Mutton said, I'm fine with water. I'll just take the chicken. The chicken with green sauce, Mutton nodded. Very good, Morgan said, and disappeared into the chaos of the dining room. Within 5 minutes, a food runner arrived with the order of chicken. The dish was half a bird, bone in, served with a green, herby sauce smothering it. Mutton stared at the plate. Great, so I'll just... Mutton was at a total loss on how to proceed. Maybe he'd just have a bite and... How's everything? Morgan was suddenly standing next to him, looking at his untouched plate. Listen, Mutton said. I was just wondering. You want to know what's in the green sauce? Mutton looked at her in surprise. Morgan looked at him slightly. It's not like it's a secret, she said. Mutton flushed, again embarrassed. Be careful, Zella said. Her lack of online presence is very disconcerting. I'm just, Morgan interrupted him. Firing off a short list of ingredients, Mutton clung to every word. Anything else I can help you with? No, Mutton said, beaming. You've been very helpful. Not really, Zella said as Morgan walked away. Wait, what? Equinox Corporation has identified all of those ingredients. There's something else she's not telling you about. Are you sure? Yes, her list corresponds with the one previously reverse engineered by our food techs. She gave you every ingredient but the one we are missing. I should have known it wouldn't be that easy. So what now? Mutton felt the current across his forehead. Follow my lead. As casually as possible, Mutton stood up from the bar and walked in the direction of the bathrooms, leaving behind his chicken, still untouched. He saw three doors labeled single stall, multiple stalls, and employees only. The third door leads to the basement, where the prep kitchen is. Pretending to wait for the single stall bathroom, Mutton stood near the third door, waiting for the opportunity to slip downstairs undetected. Don't dawdle. At 1 p.m., the afternoon prep shift begins. Mutton checked the time. That gave him only 12 minutes to get in and out before possible detection. As someone opened the multiple stalls door, Mutton used their body to shield him from the bar's view and slipped into the third door, making his way downstairs. You're looking for a recipe binder, or maybe just a laminated piece of paper. Mutton looked around the tidy prep table, searching for anything that resembled a list. 8 minutes left, Zilla said. Will you be able to warn me if someone's coming? I should detect an approaching smartphone. Scanning the walls around the room, Mutton's eyes landed on the clipboard hanging over the prep table. There. Mutton walked over, grabbed the clipboard, and saw the recipe for green sauce on top. He read the ingredients in his head. The list corresponds to what Morgan told you, and our food engineers reverse engineered. How can that be? They must already have what they're looking for. Impossible. Something is still missing. You won't find what you're looking for, a voice said from behind him. Mutton spun around and saw Morgan. I thought I might find you down here, she said. Peter Mutton. How do you know my name? Oh, I know quite a lot about you. Everything, in fact, she said as she walked casually towards him. She tapped the side of her forehead. Knew it the moment you walked in. You mean, that's right. You're not the only one with an extra set of eyes. What's she talking about? She must be wearing a knowledge enhancer also. But Mr. Wintle said that hardware was exclusive to Equinox. He said it wasn't even on the market. She must be working for someone. This explains her lack of online presence. She has been scrubbed. No matter how hard you look, you'll never find the secret ingredient. What do you mean? Equinox believes any food can be engineered. That's true, of course, but not without losing something. The missing ingredient isn't something that can be added. It's just something that is. I don't understand. Of course you don't, but I'll tell you, it hardly matters, because as long as Equinox keeps engineering food, they'll never be able to add it to the food. You drink much wine, Mutton? What the hell is she talking about? Mutton thought. Terroir, Zilla said. She's trying to fool you. Terroir, a winemaking philosophy. The complete set of environmental factors that contribute to growing the grapes. The quantity and quality of sun, the angle in which the vines are planted, the mineral content of the soil, everything. Turns out, terroir exists in food production too. Of course, we didn't know it until Equinox started engineering food. So we really should be thanking you. But once we started doing taste comparisons, it was quite obvious. You see, your missing ingredient isn't something you can engineer. We need the ingredient, Zella said, not some farm-to-table nonsense about terroir. Mutton stared blankly at Morgan. The minerals in the soil? He thought incredulously. I invite you to try the chicken, Mr. Button. Maybe you can write something about it in your food technology column. Back at the table, the chicken was still on the table, untouched. What do I do now? Mr. Wintles won't launch my career if I don't give him an ingredient. Help me, Zella. Mutton felt another twitch in his forehead, but this time the electric worm was going in a different direction, burrowing up. Hello? Mutton waited, but Zella didn't respond. Mutton looked around the bustling restaurant. It seemed like every table had ordered a plate of the chicken. Mutton looked down at his own plate. Though it had grown lukewarm, he used his fingers to tear off the drumstick. The green sauce stuck to the chicken's crispy skin. He took a bite. Oh. It was different. Green and fresh. The taste took him back. Before his job at the register, freshman year in college, before he took his first food technology class, before the E. coli outbreak. His dorm would have a potluck once a month. Everyone cooked and brought their family's special recipes. Someone always brought a green sauce just like this. Mutton slowly and lazily ate the chicken, recollecting the dinners, his old friends. When the chicken meat was gone, he sucked on the bones, still reminiscing. He leaned against the wall behind his stool and smiled to himself. Maybe the food technology section should rethink their stance on fresh food. His smile disappeared for a second, then crept back. Maybe I will write up something on this place for the food technology section, he thought. Maybe I'll title it The Secret in the Soil. What are they going to do? He thought. Fire me?
This story was originally written by Eric Williams. It was edited for this podcast by me, Gina Nichols, and was read by Vivian Bruneau. Eric is a graduate student at Iowa State University in creative writing and environment and sustainable agriculture. Vivian is a geneticist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Plant Introduction Station here in Ames, Iowa. I'd like to thank Michael Roberts for providing useful feedback during the editing process and Blue Dot Sessions, from which all of the music for this episode came. This podcast is the final component of a three-part series titled Consider the Soil. The series was created and produced by me, Gina Nichols, with support from a North Central Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Graduate Student Grant and the Practical Farmers of Iowa.
You have listened to a production by Gina Nichols of Iowa State University concerning soil health. And this is KHOI Community Radio at 89.1 FM. Let's take a music break with more local talk to come. You are listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, and I'm your host, Pat Schlarbaum, with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. Let's welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Hello, Susan.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you. Are there any announcements for the city?
Yeah, we do have a couple announcements. As we've talked about earlier this week, today is the official ribbon-cutting ceremony for the Grand Avenue Extension and opening. So that will be at 2 p.m. today. We'll cut a ribbon on the opening, and then by this afternoon, you'll be able to drive the street. So very exciting.
Isn't that something? Yeah, something to look forward to. Absolutely. And it's Beggars Night coming up, I guess.
Sure. So let's go over the weekend. First of all, Saturday is the first yard waste free day of the season. So if you've been collecting those leaves, and it's certainly blowing a lot today, so I know they're coming off the trees. Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. is your first opportunity of the fall to get rid of those leaves at no charge at the Green RU site on Friel Drive in East Ames.
Excellent.
And then, as you mentioned, Beggars Night in Ames will be Sunday. Recommended hours are from 5:30 to 7:30. So those who want to participate should put their lights on, their exterior lights, onto their homes. And those who don't want to participate should shut the lights off. And that should be a signal that you're not participating and kids should just move on to the next house. Looks like good weather, so we're expecting a nice turnout this year.
Does improve Saturday and Sunday, so that should be nice for all the kids, you bet.
Yeah, and then you remember we had to move our Franklin Park ribbon cutting. It was supposed to be on Thursday, but due to weather, we moved the Franklin Park ribbon cutting and Touch a Truck event to Monday. That'll go from 4 to 5 p.m. at Franklin Park on South Franklin Street in West Ames. At 5 o'clock, we'll cut the ribbon on that park, which features a new shelter, some new playground equipment, new swings, new grills, picnic tables. It's been all refurbished. It's a great little neighborhood park.
Yeah.
And we'll do that on Monday.
Yeah, that's going to be a great opportunity for that neighborhood to get a new amenity. A lot of growth and development on that South Franklin area over the years.
Yeah, and the whole West Ames area is expanding. There's some other actual parks now, even further west than Franklin Park. We actually opened a new park, Sunset Ridge Park, last year to serve that brand new development out there. Franklin Park is in sort of an established neighborhood by Hy-Vee, but you're right, it's time to refurbish it, give it a new lease on life, add some new equipment. And there was a lot of input from neighbors on what they'd like to see there. So we're excited to cut the ribbon on that and really draw attention to that for other people who may not know it's there.
Yeah, what a great neighborhood. That's where I lived when I was in college back in the day.
And as you recall, Edwards School had moved to its new site. So that's the next park, which is now called Tahira and Lab Hira Park. And that will be, we'll cut a ribbon on that park probably in the spring.
And that joins Munn Woods right there in that community.
It's close to it, correct? Yeah.
Let's welcome Jason Ziff. Hope that's pronounced correctly.
Actually, it is.
Okay, great. What is your title working with the City of Ames?
My title is I'm the fire inspector for the City of Ames.
Okay, and we're going to learn about Fire Safety Month here in October, so kind of wrap things up. So, yeah, change in season. I know there'll be a lot of fireplaces starting up and a lot of candles this time of year. What are your concerns, or what would you like to share with our listeners for this time of year?
Well, you are correct. We are getting into the time of the year where people are going to be turning their heaters on and they're going to be starting their fireplaces. To start with that, one of the big things is to make sure that your fireplace is in working order, making sure that it's cleaned and ready to go. Another thing would be, if you have to use space heaters, is making sure that they have 36-inch clearance around them and that they're plugged directly into wall outlets. Mm-hmm. It's a bad idea. We do not recommend that you plug a space heater into an extension cord. They just use so much wattage and energy that they really should be plugged directly into the wall. As you mentioned previously, we're coming to the end of October, which is Fire Safety Month. The theme for Fire Safety Month this year was Learn the Sounds of Fire Safety. So if you don't mind, I'm going to just remind everybody that smoke alarms and carbon monoxide alarms are something everyone should have in their house. You really need to have one in every room that someone sleeps in. You need to have a smoke detector in every room that someone sleeps in the hallways leading to those rooms, and then one on every level. And then having a carbon monoxide alarm basically somewhere central in the house that everyone can hear it. One of the big things, though, is making sure that they're actually working. And that means that we need to make sure that the batteries are functional and also that the detectors are not past their life. It's recommended that if you have a smoke or carbon monoxide detector older than 10 years, that it's time to get a new one. So if you have either one of those that's been through at least two presidential cycles, it's time to think about getting both either a smoke alarm or carbon monoxide alarm.
Yeah. Also, on the battery thing, is something I've adopted, is during the time change, we're going to be converting back from daylight savings time back to Central Standard Time.
Corrected.
That's a good time.
Why not? Great way to remember that.
Just change the batteries, and you'll always be within good levels of power because you might need it.
And you know, we also recommend that everyone puts up those smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors. And it's kind of one of those things you forget about, but you should really go through about once a month and just hit the button on those to make sure that they're working properly. Another thing to remember is, and that was one of the big things that they were hitting on this year for Fire Safety Month, is to recognize the sound of when your smoke detector goes off and when your carbon monoxide detector goes off, because they actually sound a little different. One of the things to remember is that a single chirp coming from either one about every 30 seconds, that means the battery's low and it's time to get fixed or get changed. For a smoke alarm, if it's a continued set of three loud beeps, that means there's something wrong. It's detecting smoke or fire. On the other hand, a carbon monoxide detector, if it makes four loud beeps and keeps going off, that's your carbon monoxide alarm going off. The carbon monoxide alarm is going off. Recommend that you get out of the house and notify the fire department. Same with the smoke detector. Kind of leads into another thing.
Yes.
We all need to have some place to meet outside the house in an emergency, so that when the detector goes off or something bad is happening, we can basically make sure that everyone's accounted for, that everyone is out of the house safely, so that when the fire department shows up, they know that they're not going to have to go looking for anybody and that everyone is safe.
Jason, this is Mike Metz. I've got a couple of questions, and one is when you're testing the alarms monthly, this is more a comment. I usually watch my animals, and if you do it routinely, they seem to habituate to those sounds, so it's not as shocking. But the question I have for you is, what about fire extinguishers for the home or for your garage shop area?
You know, fire extinguishers are a great thing to have. In the event of a fire, though, we really prefer for people to get out of the house and get to safety. Kind of an old rule of thumb is, if you can't put a fire out with a fire extinguisher in 5 seconds, you probably shouldn't be in there trying to fight it. Because after all, what does a fire make? It makes a lot of heat, it makes a lot of smoke. You know, that's basically poison gas. We don't really need to be breathing that in.
Right.
The other thing is that fire making smoke, basically, it's going to fill the room with smoke to where you can't see anything. So we really prefer for people to get out of the house as soon as possible in the event of a fire.
Yeah, and I've always said that the extinguisher is to help you get out as opposed to fight the fire. Let the experts do that.
That's why we wear air packs and all that sort of thing.
That's really good advice. And you mentioned deciding where the family should gather. Just for what it's worth, that was early Boy Scout training when I was growing up on the farm, and we all decided that underneath the shagbark hickory tree was where we would gather. And to this day, if I want to seek comfort or security, I think about being underneath that shagbark hickory tree. that it all started because of a little exercise of where the family should meet during a crisis.
That's great, and that's taking a little time to have a little planning for if bad things happen. Yeah. Is really something we all need to do.
That would be a good message for Fire Safety Month right there. I agree.
Oh, definitely.
We don't want to go to those bad places where bad things happen, but it's good to have a strategy or some sort of working knowledge of how to deal with these things when they occur, because we just never know.
You are correct. Unfortunately, bad things happen, but the best way to deal with them is to plan ahead.
Yeah, and we've got a couple more minutes. Any cooking discussion or suggestions you might have during? Going to be a lot of cooking going on in November.
Oh, most definitely. There is always a lot of cooking going on, especially in the holiday season. One of the big things, of course, we're coming up to Thanksgiving. Always want to make sure to mention is, if you're going to fry that turkey, A, frozen turkeys and hot oil are a dangerous combination. Don't do it. B, make sure that if you are going to fry that turkey, you're doing it outside. Big thing also is to make sure that if you're going to just cook it traditionally in the oven, making sure that your oven is big enough to hold the turkey. So it's always at cooking scene, fires can happen throughout the year, but it always seems like it's the holidays when people are cooking things that they don't typically cook.
Yeah.
It's when bad things happen. Of course, one of the leading causes of fires in the kitchen is having the stove unattended. You know, if you're cooking, you need to be in the kitchen at all times. It seems kind of silly, but another thing would be cooking and drinking alcohol are not a good combination. So something just to remember to maybe have a drink afterwards when you're sitting at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. One of my personal things that I like to point out to people is, especially with little kids, make sure that the handles on those pans on the stovetop are turned away. Because if you think about it, if consider the height of your average stovetop, if that handle's sticking out, especially if you have a toddler, you see them walking around, you know, they're kind of reaching out for things. Those handles are just about the right height for them to grab, and we don't want anyone to get burned. Mm-hmm. Either people like me who maybe their belly would bump the handle, or those toddlers who, you know, would be grabbing that handle, have something even spill out on them. So please make sure that you keep the handles of your pots and pans turned away from the stove. And then one more thing for cooking safety. Of course, I have to mention, if you have a fire on the stove, a grease fire, don't use water. Kind of like that frozen turkey and hot oil. They just don't go together. The best way to put out a grease fire is by using the lid of the pan that it came with. Either that or just something to set over the top of that pan and make sure the fire's out. Having said that, once you put that pan on, don't open it back up. Keep it shut, then call 911, and we'll be there to help you out.
You're the professionals. Turn those situations over to the professionals, but do what we can. I love just the simple suggestions of turning the handles away from harm's way or out of the way. The advice to not put water on a fire is so very important if it's a grease fire. Susan, Susan, is there anything else we could include for today?
I think I've gone through all of my messages. Thank you for the opportunity to have us on today and wrapping up Fire Safety Month. So that's a nice way to end October, and lots of activities going on this weekend. So I wish everybody a safe and happy Halloween.
Thank you, Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. And Jason Ziff, so nice to meet you. Great having you on Local Talk.
Well, thank you very much. Once again, thank you for having me.
Be safe. Wonderful. Have a good weekend, folks. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at 89.1 FM. So tell your friends, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org, and hit the play KHOI-FM yellow button. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producers Lynn Carey and Ursula Runenberg. And thank you for all that you bring to KHOI Community Radio, Ursula Runenberg. We're going to miss you. Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. And thanks to our guests, Gina Nichols, Susan Guiazda, Jason Ziff. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. This is Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard was Warren Zephron and the Werewolves of London. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.